And now an hour of questions to Jürgen Klute, Linkspartei. Our host still is Konrad.
It's a nice place here, I think. And the weather is the same like in Brussels. In Brussels, it's very sunny today when I left Brussels as well. Yeah, my name is Jürgen Klute, Konrad said it. At first, some words to my personal background, by my profession. I'm industrial chaplain or priest. I worked with the church, but not in a normal parish. I worked with workers and trade unions for a long time, and then a little bit later, the last 2 years, two and a half years, in the education, adults education department of the Evangelic Church. Hannover is the headquarters of the German Evangelic Church. Yes, and my political life started in 2004, 2005. In Germany, we have had at the time big problems on the labor market, and the political atmosphere, the political structure in Germany was changing. 2004, 2005, at first a new party came up. It was called the Party for Social Justice and Work, or the Election Alternative for Social Justice and Work, it was called, and it was very similar to the former PDS. PDS was the East German Socialist Party. PDS is the party of the democratic socialism, and these both parties, one has been the West, the other the party of the Ost Germany, East Germany, and yes, we have been very close, our programs have been very close together, and then we decided in 2007 to put these both parties together to one party, and then we changed the name, and now it is called Die Linke, the German Left Party. It's a little bit of my political background, and on 7th of June this year, I was the first time elected to be a member of the parliament. It's the European Parliament. Yes, and it's for me a very new job to do it. We started officially on 14th of July, and then we worked 2 weeks, and then we have had 4 weeks break, a summer break, and just on Monday this week we start with our work. That means I'm not able to tell so much about what the European Parliament is doing, because I just started to do this work. But my main issue in the European Parliament is economic and financial question. I am a member of the ECON. ECON is the committee, is a committee or commission of economy, and the Commission of Economy and Finances, and my second commission is the Budget Commission. Yes, and that's sort of the main issues I'm working on in the European Parliament. Further issues are social questions, and it's connected to my former job to be involved with social questions and a little bit with questions of human rights. And I come from Westphalia, from the Ruhr area, and in this area live a lot of foreign people, a lot of Turkish people, of Kurdish people, and so on. And that's a reason why I'm a little bit involved in this question of migrants and integration of migrants and human rights as well. Yeah, I think that's maybe enough.
So now you know who you actually invited.
No, it's a joke.
Minuten before, of course. So let's start with our own questions. So the questions that have been prepared. So I'm asking for question number one.
My name is Rene and I'm from Austria. And my question is, are there any blind or visually impaired people working at the European Parliament? Do you know that?
I can't say it. As I remember, I saw no blind people, blind member of the person of the members. I never saw. And in Strasbourg in July, I saw more or less every one of them. But it may be that some blind people is working in the offices, in the administration, but the number of administration workers is around about 4,500 people, and I don't know every one of them. Mm-hmm. And in the commission, the European Commission has more than, yes, three times more, around 13,000 administration workers. But I'm sure that handicapped people is integrated in this big number of administration workers.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any? Do you have any? Idea how likely it would be for someone, for instance, interested in politics, who is blind or visually impaired to get elected, because you said there seems to be no parliament member with this impairment. So is it because parties don't support those people to become candidates, or why do you think this is like that?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult question because it's to speculate about it, but I think it is a very, very hard job to do it, and I think it's in these groups inside of all political parties, you find only a very, very small number of handicapped people. In this inner group, in this central group of active politicians, because they have to do a lot of work. It's very, very hard, and by my opinion, it is very difficult. You have to be elected by the conference of the party, by the party, by people. And this is, by my point of view, very, very difficult to get enough votes to come on a list. And a lot of people say we need very, very strong, very, very fit people. They must be able to fight and so on. And it's a little bit my interpretation. We don't have any scientific investigation about this question, but my impression is that people say we need the very powerful people at the front, in the front line, in the political work. I think we discuss it every time, and I know, I remember that a number of handicapped people asked or came and asked for votes. They wanted to be or to become a candidate, but normally they don't get enough votes. That's a problem. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit the same problem like in the whole society. Yes, a party is a little bit a mirror of the normal society, and you can find the same structures, the same problems inside the party, like in the whole society. Yes, that's my interpretation of this situation.
Maybe we can come back to it later, because that sounds like an interesting, for instance, to know how to change maybe this attitude, and also the question of if it's possible for the needs of those of this group of people to be represented correctly, if there's actually no one personally like involved or like personally being a member of the group among the legislatures. But in order to give a fair opportunity to everyone, maybe I can ask for the next question.
Yeah, it's question number 3, and I have it too. Are the parliament sessions accessible for blind and visually impaired people?
You mean the rooms?
Yeah, the rooms, the sessions, I can listen to them or watch. Or
yes, that's possible.
Is it?
That's possible. There are
Is there like special audience areas?
Yes, but you can't go inside the room where the members of the parliament are sitting.
Yes.
But you can look on a gallery or balcony, and you can listen.
You can hear. Okay.
And how about can you watch the sessions online, for instance?
I don't know. The sessions of the German parliament you can see by TV on Phoenix. Mm-hmm. But it's a special TV program in Germany, and a lot of parliament sessions of the German parliament are shown by Phoenix. But I don't know any similar TV on the level of Europa.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think inside the European Parliament you can find a lot of TVs and you can follow every session, but I think you can't see it outside because the private TV stations are not interested to send this, to show this sessions. Yes.
Yes.
So maybe we can go straight ahead to the next one.
That should be the question number 4.
Can I go on? A little bit louder.
Oh, sorry. It should be the question number 4. I've got this, and I'm Sanna from Finland, by the way. I nearly forgot to say it. Anyway, the number 4 is related to equality legislation. So when you work on equality legislation, can you explain what are the most important differences between the European parties? If you can briefly explain it, please.
Yeah, I think the problem of legislation setting in the European Parliament is that the European Parliament is not allowed to make legislation. It's only the Commission. It's a difference between national democratic systems and national parliaments and the European Parliament. That's our critic as a left party on the European system. Only when the Parliament has only the chance to say we are interested to make a special legislation, they can make an amendment to the Commission, and when the Commission said no, we are not interested, nothing will happen. In the last period, the Parliament made 57 amendments for legislations, and only in 2 cases the Commission said yes, we agree and we will present a legislation draft. That's a problem. A national parliament has a right to say we will bring this legislation like equality or whatever to the parliament, and then it will be discussed and a decision will be made. But that's not the system, not the method of the European Parliament. It is more or less a parliament which has not to say so much.
but what we wanted to know is, I give you an example.
Yeah.
There was in the last period of the parliament, the decision about a guideline for post services and we have all around Europe now the possibility to send books in Braille, books for blind people, gratis. Mm. Because these books are very, very big, and it would be very expensive to send them per post. And we have libraries. They send out these books to the people because we cannot have a library for Braille books in every town. Mm. And one parliamentarian of the CSU of Bavaria said this... sending out Braille books gratis is not necessary. We don't need that. This is an old thing, and we have now the free market, and this is one reason because this free sending Braille books is not in this guideline of the EU, and so we are fearing now that perhaps in the future we won't have this opportunity anymore. And so our question is, where's the difference into the European parties in the parliament concerning the issues of people with handicaps? What is the difference between your party and the Greens and the social democratics and the conservatives?
Hmm. So it's the problem is the parliament can't start an initiative on this. This is only when these guidelines are made by the commission, and when the commission has to present it, and then only the parliament can make amendments and say we agree or we not agree. But the Commission is in the more powerful situation. It is possible to make commitments. And the other point is by groups like you, as blind people, to contact the Commission and discuss with them and find a way to build up a pressure to them and say we need this. And that can be done by together with people from the parliament. Members of the parliament can support this. That's the only way to do it. That's a different to the national level. And that's my problem with the European policy. Because it is very difficult in this context, in this European context, to push this interest, your interest, your social interest, it's. And I think you will find in the social democratic, in the left party, in the Green Party, you will find people to support you in the more conservative or in the right wing parties. I can't say it. Often it's very small groups, but I think in this FDP or the Liberals, I can imagine that they will a number of them will support this. Not all, but the problem on the other side is that to say, if you will do some special rules for handicapped people, it could be a. It can conflict with the rules of competition. That's often the discussion. Mm-hmm. You should not limit it to competition. And if you make such amendments like you can send it by free, you will find a lot of people that say no. That's that conflicts with the rules of the single market of the European market. Yes, with the rules of competition.
At least in Germany, in the last years, there was one quite big case around implementing the equal accessibility or the anti-discrimination law. So can you maybe show what the difference was between which parties supported which implementation?
Yes, I followed this process a little bit in Germany, and as I know, as I remember, Germany was one of the last countries to realize this directive of anti-discrimination. In 2003 or 2004, I joined a big conference in Bochum on this issue, and it was an international conference on this questions and issues of anti-discrimination, and as I saw, especially in Ireland, this directive of anti-discrimination was realized very more better than in Germany, and Germany was really one of the last countries. And the most parties in the German parliament say no, it's not so good because it is expensive. This directive, this is always a question of cost. They say we have to reduce costs, and this anti-discrimination directive could produce more costs because people can go to the court and say I'm discriminated. And then it could be very expensive for enterprises to fight for the court yet about this question: is someone discriminated or not? Yes, and that's what I remember was one of the most reasons in Germany to say, it's better not to realize too much of this directive. They realized it on a very very low level only, yes. But in other countries of in Europe, like Ireland, as I know, in some of the Scandinavian countries, it has been implemented very, very better, very more better.
What can you name any particular differences, like between German and Scandinavian implementations?
As I know, they build up special groups, special committees. They worked on this question of implementation together with handicapped people and so on, and they have systems of monitoring like in Ireland and so on, and the legislation is more better. So the interest of equality, of anti-discrimination is in the center, and not the question of cost reducing. Yes, that's I think is the main difference. Yes, in Germany they look only not to increase the cost, and they say we have to do everything to reduce the cost. And in other countries, the politicians or the societies says no. In the center should stand the question how we can reduce the discrimination. Yes, that's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. How about, by the way, if you have any, you know, if what our guest says sparks any new question in you, right? Every one of you is very much welcome to ask additional ones. So feel free to re-interrupt and make yourself heard. And what about the next question? Who has it?
I've got it. It's still about the law.
Okay.
So does the European Equal Access legislation also apply to education or schools?
Yes, at least yes. But the problem is that the European Parliament or the European level is not responsible for the education in the member countries. Education is not an issue of European policy. And therefore it is in the responsibility of the member states. I don't know whether you know a little bit about the German education situation. It's very difficult during the election campaign, we discussed it often in schools. What can the European Union do to push the education situation in Germany? But the answer is only nothing. We have 16 countries, several countries in Germany, and the responsibility for education questions or issues in Germany is not on the level of the German parliament, but is only on the level of the regional parliaments. And therefore, it's all this, yeah, that means the EU can say you should reduce discrimination, that's right, but it is in the responsibility of the regional parliaments, and if they don't realize it, it's not so easy to push them to change their policy. It's not a... Yeah, I think the EU don't have the so much power to order them to realize it.
Do you know of any country which has included education when implementing this anti-discrimination directive?
I think the education systems like in Finland is quite different from the German. And I think that the Finnish education system by themselves is not so discriminating like the German one. The German system is discriminating the people. If you come out from a family which is very poor, you don't have any chance, or only a very, very few chance in Germany. But the system, the Finnish system, and then the Swedish and then Danish systems by themselves are more equal than the German system. That's a problem, and you can't stop this only by an anti-discrimination directive, because the German system is so difficult and so old, discriminating. I think it's impossible to change this discrimination inside the German education system by the EU directive. That's mm-hmm. not possible.
Okay, we have some more questions on education, because of course these are young people and we are quite interested in this topic. But after we hear them, maybe you could suggest us on a general level if you would like the Commission or the European Parliament to take action in some area, maybe outside of education, because maybe education is really largely dependent on the local government, but in another area, how we should proceed in contacting. So let's now hear the remaining questions on education. Who else has educational questions?
I could.
Sana's question was already about education.
Yes, it was already.
And what's the next
number
one?
Number six.
So, I'm Marco Meers, I'm here from Germany. I've got the next question, which we are interested in the answer. So, how does the European Union monitor the implementation of equal rights in their member states?
Yes, I said I'm a new member of the parliament. I don't know the exact monitoring system, but as I know, the national governments have to report, or the system is a directive is in power, and then you have a time of 2 or 3 years to implement it. And the governments of the member states have to report about this process. And then it depends from the issue. As you know, in economic issues, the monitoring is very strong, mm-hmm. Because there's a big interest to integrate the single market, and the Commission is looking very strongly to that what the member states are doing. But in the soft issues like social questions, the monitoring is not so strong, yes, because mm-hmm. the interests are not so hard, yes.
And who is doing it? So the reports are being sent from the member state governments to the Commission, I suppose.
Yes.
And then the Commission evaluates them and whether everything that the country was supposed to do has been actually done. And what happens if the Commission discovers any discrepancy, anything that the country failed at in implementing?
Yeah, that happens when Germany, when the German government didn't implement the anti-discrimination directive. Mm-hmm. They have done it at the very last moment, and if they didn't do it in this time, then they had to pay a strafe.
A fine?
Yes. that's a normal system. They give you a change, as I know, the second or third change, and if you don't realize it or implement it, then you have to pay some money to the EU. And then the process begins as well. But the problem is really the economic questions and issues and interests are very strong. And there is a very great interest to harmonize the single market. But on the other side, the social questions, they say it should be done on the level of the member states. There is no big interest to harmonize the social systems in Europe. And therefore, you have different pressure on these directives.
Do you remember the last case where a country was actually punished for not implementing something?
Yes. Germany was pressed in discrimination questions. On the other side, the German automobile industry didn't want to implement some new rules concerning the question how to sell cars. Das muss ich aber auf Deutsch, aber ich kann nur unterstützen. Es ist die Frage der Vertragswerkstätten, war das. Das ist vor 4-5 Jahren gewesen. Da wollten VW und so weiter, die wollten die Vertragswerkstätten nicht aufgeben.
Und das wird nicht umgesetzt?
Und das wird nicht umgesetzt. Und da gibt es
Strafdrohungen. Die Drohung gibt es immer noch oder wurde schon was
gezeigt? Ja, die haben dann reagiert. Ne? Und, aber erst als die Strafdrohung kam. Ne?
Und wird dann schon die Höhe der Strafen mitgeteilt?
Ja, klar. Ähnlich wie bei Geld.
Und wie hoch war die?
Ich weiß es nicht. Das war eine ziemlich hohe Summe.
Das waren mehrere Millionen.
Das waren mehrere Millionen.
Aber Volkswagen muss es sein. Okay, so, I ask him, because I wanted to know if this process is at all working, okay? If it's only like diplomats sending nice letters back and forth, or if it's really something that the governments need to watch out for. And one of the last cases he remembered was when the European Commission wanted to force everyone to be allowed to open his own garage, his own car shop, and be allowed to, you know, repair BMWs, Fiat, you know, Renault. And not like it was before in Germany, that you actually had to sign a deal with a certain car manufacturer, and you were only allowed and only then were you allowed to actually repair the given car on with you know, set prices, set margins. So there was no competition, and the European Union wanted you know, everybody to just be able to open a shop and repair any car. So Germany, because of the lobbyists from the big car manufacturers, didn't want to implement it. And the European Union, 3 or 4 years ago, actually threatened Germany with a quite big punishment. And he doesn't remember exactly the number, but it was many millions of euros. And then only Germany reacted and finally pushed this bill through.
And the
Volkswagen had to pay this, not the government.
Yeah, yeah. It's a company. It's like Bill Gates and this Internet Explorer and Windows. It's open process. It's in discussion still. But the EU says if Bill Gates will not divorce the Internet Explorer from the Windows program, then he should pay 40 million euros punish. Mm-hmm. That's a way to push or to press the companies and the states, the member states, to implement the directives. Because the directive is a kind of right of the European Union. It says what should be done and it must be implemented in the national legislation. It is not a direct legislation of the EU, but it must be implemented in the national legislation structures. But the idea must be is important. You must do it in the idea of the direction. It could be different. It could be done different in the several member states. But it must be the same idea, the same direction. That's a character of a directive in the EU.
Action. As I said, if you have any questions, just popping out in your mind, just ask them. Otherwise, I will ask for the next question.
Yeah. Okay. It's the next question deals a little bit with the special schools and their and society, how it's working there. So about the stigma, how do you would you suggest to get rid of the stigma of special schools in the stigma on special schools in society? I mean, do you have any suggestion, or does your party deal somehow with the matter, discuss about the matter, something like this?
Yes, we have as a party. We say we need a more or less new education system in Germany, yeah, with one school and not with this special schools, an integrated education system. We have at some places experiences with them, or model schools with them. But that's not enough to have a model school. It is important to integrate handicapped people in the normal system of schools. But the problem is that at the moment, by my point of view, that our society, the German society, is going in the quite opposite direction with this elite school, with elite schools. And that means we make differences between very intelligent or more or less intelligent people and handicapped people and weak people or children. And I think that's one of the problem of the German system, that it is spread it in very, very many subsystems. And I don't see a real chance at the moment to change it and to come to one school system like in Finland. I think at the moment the Finnish school system is one of the best in Europe. And it is a system that is, very integrated. But the discussion I see in the political area is very far away from this Finnish system. I can't imagine that we will realize it within the next 50 years.
Yeah,
we just decided to put all responsibility to the regional governments. Last year, the system of das föderalistische System, das ist federalistic system in Germany, has been renewed. And one important point is that the national government has any more responsibility for school and universities. This is only in the responsibility of the local or of the regional governments and parliaments. And every country, every parliament at the moment is doing their own legislation. And it's, it's very difficult for families to change from Westphalia to Hannover or to Bavaria. It's a very big problem for the children. And that's a real problem, and I don't see any chance that this will happen. We have as a party some programs and some proposals, that's not the question, but there is no majority in the society which say we agree that and we give the power to the politicians to change it.
So we discussed in our group yesterday, or the day before, so we discussed how to solve this matter, and we came to, concerning special schools, we came to the conclusion that in our opinion it would be a good idea to integrate handicapped people. On the other hand, not only open the regular schools, the normal schools, but the special schools as well for even students who are not handicapped and having classes together, such as language courses, mathematic courses. But on the other hand, we thought about, well, there must be some kind of courses separately, such as working techniques and sports and so on. So would that be, is this yours or the way of thinking about in your party as well, or do you have another kind of thinking concerning this issue?
I think in the main line this is the same. This is the question how to implement it. You can open the special schools and open the regular schools as well. This is a way to do it, to realize it. Or you can say we will make a new system of school from top down. But the target to build up integrated schools, I think that's the same one.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the compliments for concerning Finnish school system. I'm Hannele from Finland, and I just have to, so that we don't make it so uncritically, I just have to point out a bit a critical view of our school system, and it's a pity that I spent this year in Germany. And I got to know the German school system, and I just found out that these problems that you mentioned now that are going on here in Germany are actually also by us, because I think by us it's because of the financing, decreasing the finance of the schools, and there are also big differences between some communities, some regions, for example, in northeast Finland or in Lapland, in the poor or let's say relatively poor countryside, there are some schools which are like kind of working with this idea of inclusion, and that everybody, as far as possible, could study, could learn in the same school and in the same classes, but at the same time they are decreasing the money. And the teachers are not enough to Arbeitskraft, the working resources are not enough, and that's why the system is not working. The segregation is there again, because they don't have resources enough to run this nice inclusion system.
Yes, we have in Lapland there are teacher in the other city who gives a lecture by the web camera to the other school in the Lapland, because there are not enough teachers there in that area.
And of course we can be critical again and ask if this is the right pedagogical way to make it, because maybe exactly those pupils who are taught like this would really need the real presence and not just the presence through the web camera. Mm-hmm. and things like that.
That's the spring to go to university. And
I didn't say that it's a paradise, and I can imagine that you have some problems and criticisms. Insights, it's clear.
Just to make it
but a comparing to the German system, it is much better. That's the point of view, yes.
This year I was not changing my mind, but getting some new aspects of your system. It's not that bad. Sometimes.
Maybe I can expand on the impact that the European Commission and the European Parliament hopefully can have generally on changing the opinion in society. We will have a special question on society, but in 2003, as I recall, there was this special year of people with disabilities, people with special needs. Have you seen any impact? Was there any evaluation of what this year has brought across Europe?
No, there is nothing. It's only it's a symbol. Yeah, it's a symbol policy. You can make every year main issue next year we will have a special year for fighting against poverty, but nothing will happen. No? That's a problem. This is only to make a show, to make some events, but they don't put any money to the budgets to develop systems or processes and programs to fight really against these problems. That's the point, yes. Maybe that you can find a small evaluation, but it is only written on the paper and put to the library.
Who has the next question? I think it's 7 or 8, something like that.
Where are you? I got 8 and... Yeah. I'm not sure how to find the context for this question now. I have to say I'm a bit lost, but I'll just read it and maybe Konrad or somebody else who can support us or support me to find some point for this question. We've written here how to balance, do you have any idea how could we balance the needs of blind people and needs of the society? Is this still about education, or now we jump to the society?
You've just had the privilege of transitioning us from education to society.
Okay. I was pretty slow to understand.
We had this discussion on postal services where you mentioned that economy is very strong, taken very seriously when new legislation is created. So how would you suggest us to influence? And I know you're kind of a freshman there, but how would you imagine to balance the interest of economy, of our social groups and our interests when, for instance, new directives are created by the Commission or new laws are suggested by the Parliament?
It's not so easy to say. To say it on a very abstract level, it's not so difficult. But in the reality, it's a problem. The European Union is is an economical project. It started in the 50s, at the beginning of the 50s. It was a proposal of Robert Schuman to say we have to integrate the coal mining industry and the steel industry because it's very important for the military sector, and let us integrate this economic sectors, and then we can find a way that the six member states, they started the European community or the European Union in the 50s, they can find a way not to fight again each other. And by this reason, by this history, the economic questions are in the center of the European Union. And if you look to the
Not the people.
It's in the center. The economic question and sector is in the center. And you have four basic freedoms, not rights. This is the freedom of the markets, the freedom of service sectors, the freedom of capital transfer, and the freedom of that's the fourth one. I don't remember at the moment.
The working people.
The rights for working people to go from one country to the other. That's not right. That is a freedom. It's a different to have rights or to have a to have freedom. And the European Court here made decisions based on this freedoms, four freedoms, and not on the rights of human. This is a great difference. And everything what would be able to reduce these freedoms is stopped by the European courtyards. Mm-hmm. And that's the system. Therefore, the social rights, the social interests are not in the center of the European Union. It is in the second line. And you remember in the last 2 years, we have had some decisions of the European courtyard. Like in the Commission against Luxembourg, because Luxembourg said we will have a legislation, or they made a legislation, but they said every company from outside Luxembourg will working in Luxembourg has to respect the social standards of Luxembourg. And the Commission went to the courtyard and said that's not correct, because it is By this legislation, the freedom of the freedom of capital and the freedom of services of service companies is reduced, and the courtyard said yes, that's right, and Luxembourg has to stop the social standards and have to decline. And the other point is Laval, Rüffert, and Viking. The courtyard said it has been some decisions or some issues that they fight about the rights of workers, and the courtyard said it's quite okay, workers have rights, but the rights of the worker are not allowed to stop the freedom of capital transfer. The right or the freedom of capital transfer is a higher good than the rights of workers to fight for their social interests. That's the reality of the this decision has been made since 2007, 2008, and that's a strength of all social interests. And I think this decision will will have a lot of consequences for people that are handicapped.
Which ones? Yeah. Can you
because it says the social interest. You spoke about about the targets of economy. You can say my church, the Westphalian Church, made in 2004 a declaration and said the target of the economy is to produce goods and produce services that people can live. Economy is a supporting process, is a supporting sector to make people able to live a good life. That could be one target of economy, but the European courtyard said no. the economy is not a service for human beings, but the human beings have to solve the economy. That's changed. That's a problem.
About labor market, do you see an opportunity in order to change the situation of people with special needs on labor market? Do you know if do you know if there are directives in order to integrate people with special needs? Do you know if there are, if this directive are in the agenda of the European Parliament?
I didn't got it completely.
Von der Europäischen Union Direktive mit der Integration und so weiter auf dem Arbeitsmarkt vielleicht.
No directives, only programs. Yes, you have some programs of a European Social Fund to support people. But I worked with these programs in the past, and all these programs are under the umbrella of competition, of the Lisbon strategy, and everything what the EU is pushing at the moment is to increase the competition and to make the production costs to decline the production costs. That's a philosophy of EU.
But we have this directive of anti-discrimination now. How does it go with these facts that the EU is only for increasing the competition and the market? How did this come that they also do such things like this anti-discrimination?
I think there are different lines in the EU, but the main line is the economic line. But on the other side, you have lines in the Commission and in the Parliament. They are fighting for human rights. But if you look to the reality in Germany, the number of people of handicapped people, they are integrated in the working process, has been reduced in the last 10 years very strong. We have the anti-discrimination directive of EU. That's right. But on the other side, the reality shows us that it's a number of handicapped people in the production sector and in the service sector is reduced. The German trade unions, also the DGB, made last year a statistic. They published an investigation or monitoring report on it, and they could show that in the last 10 years the number of handicapped people in the industry and in the service sector declined very strong. And that's two processes, yes. On one side, there are a small line to say it's not only that the EU is not focused on social questions or not focused on human rights questions, but there's a hierarchy. The economic interests are higher than the social interest and the interest of human rights. That's a problem. If the social interest and the human rights interest don't affect the economic interest, then it's okay, then you can do it. But if it will increase the costs of the economic sector, then very quick the interest group says, no, that's not good, we have to stop. That's a problem, it's a conflict, yes.
I have one idea. What is forbidden in the EU already is the discrimination of economic companies. Mm-hmm. For example, it's not allowed that the state gives money to a special company, and so this will have advantages against companies of other countries, maybe from other countries of the EU. For example, there was also the state gave money to Volkswagen, and the European court said, no, this is not allowed, you have to give this money back.
Mm.
And I think, if you discriminate in that way companies, it's not good for the free competition. But I think it's also not good for the free competition if you discriminate people. And it's the anti-discrimination directive began first with discrimination of women, of different races, of younger and older people. And handicapped people is only a small part of this, but perhaps they recognize that if you treat people in a different way, if you discriminate them, it's not good for the economic process. What I want to say is perhaps the politicians of the EU perhaps don't have this in mind, but in their legislation sometimes appears that even the economic process is impossible without looking at the social equality.
Maybe something will change. You asked what you can do to push your interests.
Yes. What are like the first? If you're trying to work on an amendment, you would like to suggest to the commission, or the commission is planning a law. What are the touch points like the that we could turn to influence to impact this process?
There are two ways. One way is to contact parties or members of the European Parliament and discuss with them and explain them what your interest is, mm-hmm. and ask them to transport, to push your interests, to make amendments. That's a possibility of a member of the European Parliament make amendments. And then you can see what will happen. That's one way. The other way is to go as an international group, like your group is, and discuss with officers of the Commission. That's a possibility. I know this from the Ruhr area. In former times, we have had such discussions concerning the coal mining industry of Great Britain and the Ruhr area. And my experience is that this is possible to come with groups from 2, 3, 4, 5 countries, and then you can have a meeting with officers in Brussels from the Commission, and you can explain them. And sometimes in the social departments and in the Direction General for social questions, you will find people they are open for your interests. But I think that's the two lines you can use. Yes, and the third line may be to come in public discussions about newspapers. But I know it is very difficult. But on the other side, as we have had at the 30th of June, a decision of the German Verfassungsgericht. Constitutional Court. And they said that the national parliament in Germany has to observe stronger in the future what on the European level will happen. And I think in a middle term,
in the middle term, the European system will be changed a little bit. It's a very interesting decision of our constitution courtyard, and the results of it is not very clear, but I am sure that something will change in this system of European Union, and that could be a way to discuss stronger with members of the national parliament and bring your interest to them and say, if a European direction is on the way, please look for our interests and fight for our interests. That's a new quality of policy. And as I know, in Finland and Denmark and Austria, the parliaments have more rights than the German parliament to influence the European policy. They have different systems, and the governments, the national governments, has to discuss stronger with the parliaments what they will do on the European level. And it is working, it is possible to do it. And we have at the moment in Germany the chance to implement a similar system. But yesterday the German parliament discussed about it, and this, it's an open question how what will happen now. But there is a small chance to change a little bit the system.
Konrad Halbvier.
Maybe the Austrian group can like were aware of this difference, or is it new to you?
For me also, but I'm working a lot with European projects founded by EU, and in my opinion, the EU is not only for economic things here, because I work in the social sector and we do run a lot of projects to go steps further and further to connect the link of economic and social, and also in drafted Lisbon is the main issue to connect this, to build up a link between economic and personal and social topics.
No, I don't agree. I know this contract, and by my point of view, it's not right. You have to see the decisions of the European courtyard, and they say it's a quite different direction. They say the four freedoms are the highest values.
Because I think European, it's not only economic things at the beginning. Now it's at this turn, and it has a turn economic. But the thing is that Europe, like it is now, it was not because of economic. Oh, it's good make some money with other countries, but also of social and peaceful right. So. It's not the only purpose of Europe. I think its main purpose is also to be the keeper of the peace and of a kind of, I don't know, of harmony between peoples. So it's true, and peoples are more important of economy, for my advice. So it's kind of very frightening thing that economy is breaking the rules and social rules right of people. Seems to me we are going to tyrannic totalitarianism and all those things. That's so funny, but it's not a good way for me. I think even its economy, it's important. It's true. Its economy, it has to be for people, not people for economy, like you say.
I think when we look at the EU program use that is supporting our meeting here. When we make such meetings, we get to know each other. We are not so afraid to travel to other countries. We practice to speak English. Perhaps we learn a bit of other languages, and so this program youth is good for this, that employed people are more mobile in Europe. The young people who participate in this are not so afraid to go to work to another country.
But is it right, something that I heard, that they are also reducing this?
They did reduce a bit, yes.
Financing.
So I think the European Union is doing such social support and social projects to support the economic process, because they recognized that we need some social connection that is, for supporting the economic process. One thing is impossible without the other. So I agree with Mr. Klute that for the EU, the most important is the economy, but they recognized that economy without social support won't work. And yes, we have to watch now how it will continue in the future.
Yes, but I agree also with Thomas. I think that economical question and social question should be in the same level. Should be, but economic, it's important, but economic question breaks sometimes people and they make damage. For example, we spoke about labor market, about competition, but I didn't know the word solidarity. I think that solidarity is also important than freedom or competition, I think. Mm.
Sure.
What's your opinion about this? What we say? And we say people should be more important than economy.
Should be, yes, that's my opinion.
So we should fight for, yeah, for us.
Yeah.
For the people in Europe.
Yeah, but the problem is, I agree, the EU has been, it's a peace project, that's right, but it's a peace project by economic integration, not by social integration, that's the point. No? The starting point is economic integration, like coal mining industry and steel industry. It's quite okay, I'm not against economy, that's clear, we need economy. But the question is, what's the main point? So the interest of human being is economy a service for people to be able to live, or have people to solve the economy? That's the main question by my point of view. And the other point is, peace project, okay, has been in the past. No? The Lisbon Treaty.
Economic.
It's not only economic.
It's
not
work every day. You know?
Yeah, it's peace in Europe. That's okay. But the Lisbon Treaty has a big part of military chapters, and that means the EU will not be longer a peace project. We have two big problems. That's our discussion from the left and with the other parties. You have Frontex is the frontier system to close the European frontiers, and I discussed it with several people during the election campaign in Germany. They say we have to close the European border, because we will have in the future problems by the climate changing or catastrophe. A lot of people from Africa and Asia will come to as migrants to Europe, and we have to close the borders. We don't want to have them here. Some politicians in our discussion said it very clearly: we have to close Europe, and we have to leave them outside. And the other point is, we need a military system. a big military system to get resources and nutrition. We need the military system of the Lisbon Treaty to pick the nutrition of other parts of the world. That what is discussed in the inside the EU Parliament. You can't read it in the newspapers, but you can discuss it in the commissions, in the groups, and in the Parliament. It's a reality. So it's no longer a peace project. Mm-hmm. That's our criticism. As a left party, that we say you can't go to press the rest of the world to save our life and our living standards. We need contracts, fair contracts with the other parts of the world. When we get these problems of climate change and so far, we can't find a military solution that will not work. It's a little bit far away from your special questions, but it's a part of EU as well, yes.
I think all is connected.
Maybe one last question before a small coffee or water break.
Question number 9 was already answered. It was about our ways to influence.
Okay.
And I really suggest now have a break so that we don't.
So, 5 minutes is enough?
Time.
5 minutes break.
Social interests.